Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served. And I am down with that. I am honored to be here. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman this entire week. And as I said, we're going to have discussions all week with filmmakers, musicians, activists, organizers, comedians. This week, this show, we're going to have, in the second hour, I'm going to be looking at two films. There's a very interesting film made by an American about what's about the English activism movement, particularly as it pertains to the global warming movement and the climate change movement. Her name is Emily James. She's created this amazing film called Just Do It. Check it out at justdoitfilms.com. And it's really just an amazing documentary. It's not heavy at all. It's actually incredibly lighthearted and fun because it's this idea that if we're not dancing at the revolution, if we're not singing, if we're not having fun, we're not doing something right. And then in the second part of hour two, we're going to have, it's a little heavier subject. It's called The War You Don't See. And it's made by a gentleman named John Pilger. And it's about how the media conspires with government on the march to war. Your calls are coming up, 1-888-321-6001. Join us on Facebook, Norman Goldman Show. This is the place where justice is served. We'll be right back with your calls. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman. This is the place where fierce independence is the norm. I am so glad to be here. It's kind of fun to be right where we are in North Hollywood. This is where I grew up and got into all sorts of trouble. I can see myself just running wild in the streets around here as a youngster. But I'm sane now, and I recovered. And as I promised, we're going to your calls. Let's go to Andy, line two in Chicago. Andy, you're on the Norman Goldman Show. This is Adam Klugman. What's up, Andy?
Right. Hey, Adam, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
I hate to start off with kind of a dark note, but
okay.
I think your thoughts about socialism are fine, but I think it's going to start taking a national socialist spin. What I mean is that if history is, we're dealing with just what you said, a lot of problems, a meltdown. I think we're going to be dealing with, we're seeing just the beginnings of social unrest. And unfortunately, out of that social unrest, there's going to be a lot of a big-time blame game played. And out of that's going to come out some very significant anti-Semitism. And I mentioned to Norm, and, you know,
Let's slow down for a second. Why anti-Semitism?
Because of history, Adam, you just have to take a look at history. People have to blame somebody. People are going to start blaming people for what caused this problem.
But here's my feeling. It doesn't have to be that way, right? I mean, here's my central philosophy.
That's where you're making a mistake. You're in denial.
No.
The reality is that you're pushing for radical change, and there will be radical change. What history shows is that out of that, and that's going to be the big surprise, because in this country, you kind of say, well, we have all the protections, this, that, and so on. Talk to the ADL.
Yeah, but
the ADL has seen already a significant rise in anti-Semitism.
Anti-Semitism is always a force in the world. It's always something we have to contend with. But thanks for the call, Andy. I do appreciate it. But my feeling is that if we want to seek that, then we will find it. Whatever we want to seek in the world, we will find. So if we want to seek hatred in the world, we find it. If we want to seek guilt in the world, well, there's certainly plenty of that. If we want to seek humanity in the world, we will find that. We find whatever we seek. So I don't even want to hold that thought, because this movement is too righteous. We're right on. We are too good to start holding thoughts like that. It's not naive. It's about where we hold our thoughts. That's how we create the world that we live in. Let's go to Mark in San Francisco. Mark, you're on the Norman Goldman Show, where justice is served. I'm Adam Klugman. What's up?
Adam, I wanted to bring up the fact about our Congress that signed the pledge for Grover Norquist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you hear a lot in the media about, oh, Washington's broken. Well, why don't they nail it down why it's broken? Why don't they just say that there's a group of Republicans, mostly the Republican Party, that signed a pledge that they will uphold the 1% from being taxed at the expense of 99%, no matter what happens to the country, they're going to hold to that. And that's not democracy. That's a direct assault.
Well, I agree. And I wonder, is it even legal at some level to be signing pledges? If you take a pledge as a congressperson to defend the United States Constitution, and then you take another pledge that somehow trumps that, is that just inherently, I know it's inherently unethical, but my question is it illegal? Thanks for the call. I really appreciate it, Mark. Let's move on. Let's go to Rick in Washington. Rick, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. You're on with Adam Klugman.
Hey, Adam. You know, the protests, the Tea Party and the Wall Street protests, anti-Wall Street protests, they mean a lot. It comes down to one really important thing, organizing, voting, trying to get people into the government who are going to help make these changes.
Right
now what we have is a government where the corporatists are basically running it. Running it hard to the point where it will destroy people.
I would say that they've completely overrun our political system. So here's my question for you. You know, I agree with you. We need people in there who are willing to stand up to the corporate influence that has completely taken over our political system. But here is my concern, that what happens is that rather than us being the cure, we get assimilated by the disease. So maybe what's really great about the Occupy movement is this kind of leaderlessness right now, in which we're still convening a conversation. And maybe what we really need is patience. Maybe we need to understand each other and ourselves better before we're interested in acquiring too much power. That's kind of where my head is at with it right now. But it's changing, because I agree with you.
My head's not far from yours. I think the voting are little things. School board elections, primaries are particularly important. Little things. Not the president. By the time you vote for somebody who's going to be president or Congress, the House, not so much. 30, big time, because it takes that much money to even get that close.
Well, yeah, here's the question. Do you even want to vote for somebody who wants that job at that point? I mean,
the one reason why the Supreme Court, the things that end up changing things in big ways that make it harder just to take our first step in the first place.
I know. You're right.
It matters a lot.
I do agree with that. I think that's important. And I struggle with that. I really do. I think that's a real dilemma. Thanks so much for calling. I appreciate it. You're listening to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where fierce independence is the norm. I'm Adam Klugman, in for Norman Goldman. You can check me out if you want to know more about me at madashellinamerica.com. I have my own radio show out of Portland, Oregon. I happen to be in sunny L.A. right now and enjoying it tremendously. I'm going to go to, let's go to Rick in Seattle. Rick, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman. What's up, Rick?
Well, you can call me Rick, but I usually go by Ken.
Ken, I knew that. I was testing you to make sure that you knew your name.
I'm pretty good with that. Hey, I think this is a great topic, and I think it really comes down to this. I think since Reagan, there's been a meme in this country that capitalism equates to democracy, and it doesn't.
Right.
Capitalism is an economic system. Democracy is a governmental system.
Right on, Ken.
And capitalism does not equate to freedom, because when you look at China, they've taken capitalism on as their economic model, but they are not free.
Right. I think that, for me, that's like the wet dream for the corporatists who are running this country. What they want is political totalitarianism,
right,
with free markets and economic upward mobility as kind of a bad faith trade for freedom. And that's not democracy.
And that's exactly right. And the gentleman that brought up National Socialism, he's got it completely backwards. We're heading towards that with this current model.
Yes.
And if we start implementing a democratic socialist model in this country, democracy with socialist tendencies, and really get serious about it, it can't go anywhere but more freedoms, because it starts working in a collective way. We start taking our schools seriously. We start taking our police and fire departments and post offices seriously. And we start working as a community, because I'm pretty much convinced at this point that if we don't start working as a collective, we're going to perish as a collective.
Right, but aren't you really encouraged by the Occupy movement?
I have been down to the Seattle one 5 or 6 times now. My wife and I have donated goods and money. I've been waiting for this for 10 years. Right. And to watch my generation, the Xers, and the millennials finally waking up and realizing that we have to take control of our own destiny Man, it is so time, and I will give everything I've got.
It has filled me with hope. I have the same exact experience, Ken. Thanks so much for the call. I do appreciate it. Yeah, it just filled me with hope. I mean, when I got my radio show, this is the first thing I started talking about. We got to hit the streets. We got people power. We got hit with nonviolence, non-cooperation, love. But, you know, somewhere in my heart, I didn't think it was actually possible. And the reality is that it is here, and it is incredibly exciting. Let's go to Jerry in City Harbor, Washington. Jerry, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman. What's up?
Hi, Adam. I just wanted to say that I'm appalled at what's going on in this country. I feel like it's going downhill like a greased pig, and I'm kind of groping around. I listen to AM 1090 all the time.
Oh, don't do that. You can get hurt that way.
Groping to find an answer because I don't want to vote in either one of the... or for either one of the parties.
I know, that's
a... I'm waiting to see an emergent movement or something. And then the final point I wanted to bring out is I believe that Randy Rhodes is right on the money when she says until we get the money out of politics, it's not going to change.
I agree. That has to be priority one.
I'm frustrated, but I wanted to call and give you my support.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate all of Norm's listeners giving me a call here. It's great to talk to you guys. I listen, and I know that you guys are smart callers, but it's nice to have some direct contact with you. Let's go to Christina in Illinois. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where fierce independence is the norm. I'm Adam Klugman. What's up?
I am so honored to be on the air on this program. I'm honored to talk to you, and I'm so glad that, like, your dad's personality comes out in you.
Yes, it's true.
I can totally see your dad in you. When I was a kid, I thought he was. I wanted to marry him when I was a kid. So I just want to tell you that it's an honor to talk to you. I thought he was the best thing in the world. So,
thank you.
But and now you're in the company of Norman Goldman.
I know.
I am like that is just amazing to me.
It's pretty cool.
The two of you, you know, that you two hooked up. It's great.
It is. It really is. And we were instant friends. You know how you meet somebody and you feel like you've known them for 20 years. I mean, it felt like Norm and I grew up with each other. We just understood each other instantly. I appreciate the call, Christine. I'm going to move on. Let's go to Alice. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman. What's up?
Oh my goodness! Hello, Adam. This you are really going to set the airwaves on fire tonight. This is a wonderful subject you're bringing up, and I'd only like to ask you to please, please, please encourage people to use their vote to push this thing forward. What people don't realize is, the apathy that comes with the frustration is the reason we're getting more and more mired in this mess. Use your vote, use the media. Do what they did in Ohio. Ohio got MSNBC out there with the Ed show, and I believe Ed was part of the reason that they struck down that problem with the firefighters where, you know, they got that, I think it was option two or whatever.
Oh, yes.
Unions, across the country, the Republicans are trying to do union busting. And one thing they said this morning on the news is they're not trying to put us back to 1990. They're trying to put us back to 1890 with Newt Gingrich talking about putting children back, 13-year-olds to work as janitors. And, what people are just, they're so frustrated. I really understand. My daughter is in college now. And she says, Mom, we got to go down to Occupy Wall Street and show support. And I said, that's right, we do.
You do.
It's just that what people don't realize is we have a president. I know, money, politics, everything. Obama got into office with an agenda that people wanted to see happen. But then the people came behind him, voted in all these Republicans, and they have made a statement. Boehner and Mick, whatever his name is, has said our only purpose is to get rid of Obama. And they've overreached.
They have.
Just not acting with him whatsoever and doing this whole Norquist thing, people are actually getting a chance to see how obstructionist and big business oriented they are. And I think it's the power of the vote. People should get out there, support, you know, because right now that's our choice. Have you noticed
me? Alice, you are mad as hell.
Running against Obama. Everybody who's in the left and in the center are recognizing that this is a fight to the death. And if people don't get out there and vote to move forward, you know, it may be baby steps. But if they don't use their vote because they're frustrated, we are going to get more Republicans. The Republicans are going to take it as a sign of victory.
You're right. Alice, I want to stop you. I got to move on to other calls. But here's what I want to say.
Washington Post. I go on there and I put liberal ideas on the right-wing Washington Post. Because I want people to know we're about more. We're a whole country.
You're right. And you need to run for office, Alice. You need to run. Like Norm says, it's people like you that need to run for office because you are unstoppable. Alice, run for office. Figure it out wherever you are. I don't care if you start with your school board. You need to run for office. That's what I hear Norm say all the time on this show. We need to get motivated. We need to become the system. We need to become the cure. And we need to do it in such big numbers that we overrun the disease so that we don't get subsumed by the disease, but that we remain in solidarity as the cure for the disease that has corrupted our democracy. 1-888-321-6001 is the phone number. You can join us on Facebook at the Norman Goldman dot show. No, the Norman Goldman show. Or you can log on at www.normangoldman.com. This is the place where justice is served. I'm Adam Klugman. Your calls are still next. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served. I'm Adam Klugman, in for Norm, who is out and about doing great political works, as he always does so selflessly. I'm honored to be actually sitting in Norm's chair here in North Hollywood on a sunny day. If you don't know who I am a radio show host from Portland, Oregon, with a show called Mad as Hell in America. .com. And if you want to find out more about me, you can go there. I also have a similar podcast arrangement that I learned from Norman Goldman, because we've got to support progressive voices on the air with public television under attack and public radio under attack. We need independent voices on the air like Norm. I'm honored to be here. Let's go to your calls. Dave in Chicago, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Hi, great show. I'm listening, even though I disagree with about 99% of everything that I'm hearing.
Excellent.
For all this Wall Street stuff, what is the purpose of it all? In other words, I understand that people are mad and they need a villain so they can blame the Republicans or whatever, but I'm just saying, at the end of the day, what's the end game? What's really going to happen? They're going to live there forever? They're going to go home? Do they really think the system's going to change by camping out in the public park?
I don't think it's about camping out in the public park. I mean, I appreciate you listening, even though you disagree, Dave. I think what it's really about is about changing the conversation first. And part of this process, and I think it's a creative and a co-creative process, is we don't know where it's going. We don't know where we are actually headed yet, but we're going to figure it out, and that's the point. Let's go to Charles in New Mexico, line two. What's up, Charles?
Hey, Adam. How's it going?
I'm having fun.
Can you hear me okay? I'm on the highway.
I hear you fine.
Okay, great. I really like what you said about the socialism. You know, democratic socialism, I personally think, is the, of all the systems that we have in the world right now, and it's demonstrably true that in countries like Denmark and Sweden and Norway, these countries are democratic socialists, and if you, any survey of the people in the world and who is the happiest, these people have always ranked near the top. They have the...
That's right.
They have quality education, they have health care, they have time off when they have children.
Right, and
children get a good education, I mean, et cetera, et cetera.
And the thing is, when you have those things, and I appreciate, thanks for the call, Charles, when you have those things, you tend to be happy and you don't need as much money when people are fed and educated and clothed and well taken care of. Let's go to Chris in Illinois. Chris, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Hi, Adam. I'd like to ask you, Are you for nationalizing the banking system, as has already been done twice during the neoclassical era of this country?
I'm not for nationalizing the banks. I'm for breaking them up the way they did the telephone companies in the 1960s and 70s. I think they need to be broken up. I don't think that we need to nationalize them, but I do think that they need to be broken up because they are too big, and they're so big that when they fail, they take us down. I got to move on. I got a lot of calls. Let's go to Richard in Massachusetts. Richard, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Yeah, well, thanks, Adam. Nice talking to you. Adam, Portland, with the city that your talk show hosts out of, is a very progressive, liberal city.
Yes.
Tell me about the mayor. Why is he such taking such a hard line against Occupation Portland? And I also want to know, if it was on the ballot now, gay marriage today, do you think that the state of Oregon would vote for it today rather than turn it down like they did before?
Wow, those are two really big questions. Your first question, thanks for the call. I have to say, oi. Sam Adams tried. He tried at the beginning and then he turned. And that's a whole nother conversation about the police exchange reform forum. I don't know. I'll get into that later in the week. That's a big question and it requires a big answer. Let's go to Sam. Sam in California, welcome to Madison in America. No, wrong. Sorry. Who is this? Welcome, not to Madison in America. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Yeah, this is Hans in Chicago.
I knew that, Hans. I was testing you. I lost Hans. Let's go to Sam in California. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Actually, this is Sam in Nashville, North Carolina, but that's close enough for me. I have a.
This is Adam Klugman in for Norman Goldman. We'll be right back after this.
You never know.
Take action. Just do it.
I want to feel like I'm doing something rather than nothing.
Go on, just do it.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Norman Goldman Show. You can check us out on Facebook at the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, in for Norman Goldman. This is the place where justice is served. And what you just heard was a trailer for a yet-to-be-released movie, a very exciting documentary by a young woman named Emily James. You can check it out at justdoitfilm.com. Before I bring Emily on, let me tell you a little bit about her. Emily studied documentary directing at the National Film and Television School. Her student films were already winning international awards. After her first broadcast commission, The Luckiest Nut in the World, the time to be revered as a television. She was revered as a television innovator. Following the experimental film Don't Worry and What Would Jesus Drive, Emily's attention has now shifted to a feature documentary with Just Do It, a tale of modern day outlaws. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I did have a chance to watch your remarkable documentary, and I'm having trouble knowing where to start with it because it is such a broad subject, and yet you did a remarkable job in making it very personal. So tell us a little bit about your approach. So first of all, just let people know what the film is about, and then tell us about some of the choices you made to make it so personal.
Right. So the film is kind of a year in the life of a large community of activists in the UK who participate in direct action on climate change. So I drew an ensemble cast from the ranks of groups like Climate Camp, Plain Stupid, which is an anti-aviation expansion group, and Climate Rush, which draws its model from the suffragettes. Exactly as you say, the real challenge with this was that because I wanted it to be a portrait of a community, and specifically of a community who are very opposed to the idea of having heroes and leaders drawn from their ranks. So these are non-hierarchical groups
that
are very similar to the kind of thing that Americans are now seeing with the Occupy movement. So they don't have leaders, they don't have hierarchy, and they're very, very careful not to have celebrities made out of individuals in the way that they engage with the media. So what I did was I chose an ensemble cast. I said I'm going to follow 12 people over the space of a year, and I didn't choose anybody. I chose people very much kind of rank and file, if that's a phrase that you would understand, but, you know, very much just kind of not anybody that's like, out there, kind of the front press face of it, or necessarily somebody who they might look like they were like the key organizer. These are just really...
Let's get El Troll kind of, ready, please.
Sorry, what did you say?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
So basically, you know, we followed them over the course of the year. In the end, I thought there would be 9 people in the film. In the end, it was actually really focused down on 6 people, but we felt that that still gave you a sense of it being a broad community rather than really singling out individuals. But you need to single out individuals to some extent in order to make a feature film, because that's what people really can relate to, and they can get emotionally attached to those people, and then they care about them as the story plays out.
Our guest is Emily James. She is the director of a remarkable documentary about activism in the UK. It is called Just Do It, A Tale of Modern Day Outlaws. You can check it out at justdoitfilm.com. You know, one of the things, Emily, that I instantly remarked on the film was that it was fun. You know, you could have taken a very heavy-handed approach, but you didn't. And tell me a little, I think I know why you made that choice, but tell me why you made that choice. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we often make this joke that we're the only feel-good film about climate change. I mean, I suppose partially that's just me as a filmmaker. I've always used humor and levity and lightness to try and kind of cut through what can otherwise be really quite dark, serious subject matters. So I think that was partially, that's just my kind of go-to position as a filmmaker. It's the way that I like to tell stories. And so that was almost a given from the beginning. It was probably harder, really, to talk to the people who were in the film, to make it clear to them that we would be laughing with them rather than at them, you know, because they were pretty nervous about the whole thing. In fact, they were pretty nervous about the whole thing. I mean, here I was saying, can I come and film a bunch of material that could very easily be used against them in court and to build a whole conspiracy case against them? So getting them to agree and getting the access to film them was a whole challenge in and of itself. So many serious films around these issues have been made. I kind of felt like the thing that was so fascinating and the reason why I really wanted to make a film about these people was because when I met them, I was struck by the humor that they incorporated into the actions that they did, and how their banners would always have witty puns, and how as individuals they kind of dealt with the enormity of the situation that they were dealing with. And you know, when you really dig deep into climate change, it becomes quite clear quite quickly that this is a huge problem, and they dealt with that enormity through humor, you know, in that kind of if you're not going to laugh, you'd cry kind of way.
Yes.
And so I was drawn to them because of the type of films I like to make.
Our guest is Emily James. She is the director of a new documentary, not even out yet, seeking distribution. I want to talk about that in a minute. The name of the film is Just Do It, A Tale of Modern Day Outlaws. It could not be more timely given what's going on all over the world. Emily, could you have, and it is about the political activism in the UK, which mirrors so much of what's going on right now in this country with the Occupy movement. Did you have any idea that this would take off and make your film so incredibly relevant?
Oh, my goodness, no. I mean, it's been, as you say, suddenly people in the United States can see why this is something that they might be interested in, right?
Right.
I think prior to, even just a few months ago, the interest that we were getting was really just about the climate change aspect of the film, because these people are climate change campaigners.
Right.
Or activists. They wouldn't like to be called campaigners, they're activists.
They are activists.
And so that was the kind of area. And things around the fact that they were organizing non-hierarchically and about drawing connections between the role of corporate influence and the fact that we are struggling to resolve the issues of climate change, those things were not really getting a lot of resonance in America.
Right.
And now suddenly they are, which is just great for us, because really these activists that are in the film, you know, for the year that I was following them, it was the year in the lead up to Copenhagen, and so they were really focusing on climate change, but they have a much broader kind of spectrum of critique, which climate change is just one of the areas that they're looking at, because for them, all of these problems are interconnected, and they have to do with corporate power and control, and they also have to do with the lack of ability of individuals, I mean, a kind of failed democracy, really, where individuals today in the UK and in America, I think we're in a very similar situation, really just do not have much say over the major choices that affect their lives. And so for them, that's where they really get hold of the non-hierarchical thing and really trying to say, look, we can build completely alternative ways of organizing, and they might look something like this.
Absolutely. Our guest is Emily James, justdoitfilm.com. It's called Just Do It, A Tale of Modern Day Outlaws, about activism in the UK that is so strikingly similar to what we're seeing here in this country. It makes the film mind-bogglingly relevant at the same time that it really, I think, Emily, portrays the movement as fun, that these are people that it's fun to claim your power. It's not fun, but it feels good, and it should feel good, you know, and that was what came across in the film for me, is that when we claim our power, we should feel powerful, and feeling powerful should feel good, and we should be having fun, because that's the spirit that's going to, that if we bring that spirit forward, that's the spirit that's going to heal the world. I do not want to run out of time, so I want to talk a little bit about how you would like to distribute this model and how listeners can kind of help here in this country, because it's been distributed overseas, but we want to get it distributed here, and you and I talked a little bit about that. So we've got a couple of minutes left. So you've been giving this out to, you've been offering free screenings to Occupy movements anywhere in the country. You can contact Emily or someone at justdoitfilm.com. But you were talking about trying to raise $50,000 here in this country is what it would take, and it would be great if we could do this kind of outside the whole corporate film system and just do it ourselves. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think it'll come as no surprise to people to hear that the commercial and corporate interests have pretty much got a lockdown on releasing a film in America.
Really?
God, really?
I'm so surprised.
So it proves to be pretty difficult to get a film out if you haven't got a little bit of a bankroll behind you. And the big commercial guys have had a look at the film, and they've said, well, you know, we don't think this is going to make any money, so we're not prepared to put the money in that it would take to release it in the cinemas. And so we're looking at the moment at trying to raise that money independently so that we can get it out into the cinemas ourselves. And when we say in the cinemas, you know, we don't just mean, like, at the art house cinema, where that would be great. We'd like to have a handful of cities like that, but that's quite expensive. We're also looking at what's now called semi-theatrical screenings, and that's everything from church halls to community groups, to schools, you know, anything, any place where you can get a projector and some seats and you can show it. So, you know, if there's anybody out there that wants to contribute to our fighting fund and give us some money to get it into the theaters, we really need that, because that's how people hear about the film and it's how it gets reviewed. But we're also looking, it's for individuals who want to just put their hand up and say, I know a place that we can screen this. I'm going to register my interest. So go onto our website and let us know where you are. Register that you will organize a screening. And then if we can really show that we've got a kind of groundswell of people, then we can go back to the people that organize these things and say, look, there is a demand for this stuff.
It is totally consistent with the spirit of film and the spirit of activism for us, we the people, to put this film in cinemas. Please help Emily James at justdoitfilm.com. Just Do It, A Tale of Modern Day Outlaws, is seeking distribution here in this country. If you can help, please contact someone at justdoitfilm.com. Emily, thank you so much for coming on to the Norman Gold Man Show. We really appreciate it. We wish you the best of luck. Fantastic, fantastic film.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is Adam Klugman filling in for Norman Goldman and the Norman Goldman Show. This is the place where fierce independence is the norm. We'll be right back with your calls after this. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman, but this is still the place where justice is served. We are going to go to your calls in a minute, but if you want to learn more about me, go to madashellinamerica.com. I have my own show up in Portland, Oregon. You can check me out at adamklugman.com. You can Google me. You can do whatever you want. But we're going to go to your calls now. Nancy in Seattle, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Oh, thank you, Norman.
I'm not Norman, but honored that you would call me that.
No, I listen to your show every day, and I am very pleased with it.
Good.
I was born in 1926. That makes me almost 85 years old.
Wow.
And I'm going strong, but I'm not well enough to go fight the battle of... the bridges and all
that.
I
mean,
you
could go to the Occupy movement.
But
I have
a voice, and I use it.
Good for you. What do you say when you use your voice?
As far as those people we seem to be listening to about all the time, we forget that we already have a president, and his name is Mr. Obama.
It is Mr. Obama. I've got some issues with him, Nancy, but I'm going to move on. When he's good, I try to praise him, but these days, I'm not so happy with the guy. Let's go to Bob in San Francisco. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show, Bob.
Hi, Adam.
Hi.
Emily, she might contact the Balboa Theater in San Francisco. I'll send that to her website.
Yeah, please do. Any way you can help.
You mentioned early on that you thought the Dems had won, or people are saying they had won with a super Congress.
Yeah, well, I don't, but yes, I've heard people say, yes, good for the Democrats for standing up to them.
Well,
on the deck of a drowning, sinking ship is how I look at it.
They technically have more days, even though they've announced that they have called it off and it's over, but, you know, that's only the point where the Republicans might start to get serious, but, Emily was talking about lack of leadership. The downside of it, I found out Sunday, went down to the Occupy in San Francisco and tried to hand out this thing I wrote, which I will send to you now, or to Norman Goldman.
Yeah, do it.
And couldn't find anybody that cared or looked important or anything until I found Daniel Ellsberg, so I gave it to him.
Well, that's a good guy to give it to. Daniel Ellsberg's a good guy. Bob, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. I got to move on. Let's go to Sasha in Chicago. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. You're on with Adam Klugman.
Hello, Adam. How are you?
Well, I'm having a great time.
Wonderful. Now, I just wanted to get into discussing private student loans for a brief second.
Okay.
Because I feel like that is something that has been the government's big secret. And they're not doing anything to help us students that are graduated students, you know, students in college. They're not doing anything to help us as far as trying to pay these off. They're pretty much a secondary cousin to the mortgage crisis. And I've been trying to figure out what to do, who to talk to, or how to resolve this problem.
Sasha, that's a really good point, and it's an emerging problem. People are graduating. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. People are graduating from college with what are essentially mortgages on their life, but with no real estate to show for it and no jobs. And this whole student debt thing, I mean, it costs, you know, $15,000 a year to go to a public state college. It's madness. Well, we're going to go to break soon. When we come back, we're going to have another filmmaker that's talking about the war you don't see. Christopher Hurd is next. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman here in lovely downtown North Hollywood. And it's lovely when you live in Portland, I don't care where you are, in Los Angeles, because the sky is blue and the sun is out, and it's 70 degrees. And right now in Portland, it's about 42 and rainy and cloudy, and it's going to stay that way for the next 6 months. So I have a lot to be grateful for this Thanksgiving. Number one, I'm sitting in for the Norman Goldman. Number two, I'm here in L.A. Number three, I get to spend it with my old man, which is something I haven't done in a while. So I'm happy to be here. We're working on getting Christopher Hurd here, author, producer of a film called The War You Don't See. He is in the UK, so we're working on that. But in the meantime, we are going to go to calls. George in Chicago, Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman. What's up?
Well, it's not sunny California here today. It's rainy and wet and cold and damp.
Oh.
But our spirits are high because we have great progressive radio in the city of Chicago.
Yes, and that progressive radio is the Norman Goldman Show.
WCPT, 820 AM.
Yeah.
And 92.5, 92.7, and 99.9 on the FM dial.
Did you have something you wanted to say, George?
Yeah, one of your earlier callers brought it up, and it's the problem with public education, higher education. I'm not as familiar with the nuts and bolts of how we got to this point compared to where we were 30 or 40 or 50 years ago, but our contemporaries, like in France and Germany and England, if their young people want to go to school and get a good education, like all the way through medical school or law school, it's essentially paid for.
Right.
And by doing that, they're maximizing their intellectual capital and enhancing their people to the fullest.
Right, right. I mean, it also makes good economic sense, right? I mean, you invest in your people, and then you get a return on it. This is about the fact, and I appreciate the call. Thanks, George. This is about the fact that we have people that aren't interested in the highest good. They're not interested in what works for this country. They're interested only in their own self-interest. That's why we're standing up. That's why the system is broken. It has been completely co-opted by people who put their own self-interest over the interests of everybody else. That is the problem. Julie in Chicago, welcome to Norman Goldman. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. I just get too excited. I just get all fish-muzzled. Julie?
Hello?
Julie, are you there?
Oh, yes.
Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Hi.
Oh, we lost Julie. Let's go to Rick in California. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Hi, this is Rick.
Yeah, Rick, welcome.
I was very impressed with the young lady who's made the movie about global warming.
Actually, it's not about global warming, but it's about our response to climate change, right?
Yeah, the activism.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm a global warming blogger, climate change blogger.
Mm-hmm.
And for one thing, I've talked to Norm before. The name of my blog is Energy Solutions We Can Believe In.
Yes.
And I write about the disinformation campaign that is trying to fool everybody in America about global warming.
I think they've succeeded more than we would like, too. I mean, I think they succeeded in at least placing doubts in people's minds. And it's incredibly unfortunate. People will have to be neck deep in water somewhere or ice or whatever it is that's going to happen to us before they'll believe it.
And I thought I would include a few good sources of information for people to learn about this. There's a book called Merchants of Doubt.
Yes, Merchants of Doubt. I know the book. I had the author on. What's the name of the author?
Well, there's a co-author. Right. I can't remember his name, but her name is Naomi
Orestes. Orestes, yes.
Right. And there's another new book called The Inquisition of Science, who I forget the author. But I also have an idea for a movie myself. I'm not a movie maker.
Nor am I.
The idea is for somebody to make a hard-hitting documentary along the lines of those books. There's about six of those books, which I list on my blog. Another one is called Climate Cover-Up, written by the people at a website called The Smog Blog.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I actually wrote last night, I wrote a letter. There's an organization of Hollywood celebrities who are environmentalists. There's an agency that deals with them and hires them out for public speech.
George, I'm going to have to wrap it up. I want to make room for some other callers. Why don't you give your blog one more time?
Yeah, Energy Solutions We Can Believe In. And my other point is, if you know anybody in the music industry who wants to make a documentary like that, give them the idea.
Great. Thanks so much for the call, George. I do appreciate it. Let's go to Harvey in Berkeley. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Hi, Adam.
Hi.
I sent you an email, and the title of it was More Than 1 in 5 American Children Live in Risk of Hunger, and the 16 million children in the U.S. live with food insecurity, 1 in 5 kids.
Right.
And there's 49 million Americans in total. That's 1 out of 6 people who are food insecure. And at the same time, and that's from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, at the same time, another article says It says U.S. agriculture exports are projected to reach a record $137 billion this year.
Yes.
And hit the same mark next year. And it's more than just grains and soybeans, rice, beans. The U.S. also exports powdered milk, cheese, butter, and nuts, pecans, pistachios, almonds. And so here we are exporting tremendous $137 billion worth of food. And I say feed America first. It shouldn't. This is wrong. I say occupy the Department of Agriculture and make sure that we're fed here in America, because a fed America is a strong America.
That's right.
And if we have all of our people food insecure, they're not getting the right nutrition. Their brains, though, especially the children, their brains don't develop right, and you end up with a lot of not only people who are food insecure, but they don't have the energy, they don't have the time and the brain power to fight their way out of it. So I think we have to, again, feed America first, and then whatever, I'm not against exports, but whatever's left over after every American is fed, that we can export to the rest of the world.
I agree. And it's more than just an issue of energy and nutrition. It's a moral and ethical issue. We must not allow children to go hungry in this country when there's as much food as there is here. That's just pure madness, and that's what we're going to change. Let's go to David in Tacoma. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. David, what's up?
Hi. How are you this evening here?
I'm having fun. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm enjoying listening to you. I kind of missed the ranting with Norman, though.
Oh, well, you know, he'll be back soon.
Where'd he go?
He gave me the ship. He's out doing good political works of the world.
Yes.
That's what we love about him. Selfless guy.
I want to maybe change the thing here a minute and talk about federal taxes here. We just had an initiative voted on here in Tacoma that would provide that marijuana and cannabis offenses be lowered by the law enforcement in the city.
Yes.
And that was voted on, I think, the 8th.
Yes.
And last Monday, or Tuesday, this Tuesday, the feds came in, they busted all the pharmacies for it.
Of course they did. Because
yes,
why?
Did.
Because they need the war on drugs. Thanks so much for the call.
Wait a minute. I'm not through here.
All right.
Okay. The people I'm going for, they're paying federal income tax or federal taxes on it. So how can the feds tax something that's illegal?
I don't know. That's a really good question.
Yeah, I was trying to get this to Norman, but it's hard to get through to him.
It is. Well, I think you should write him at norm@thenormangoldmanshow.com is the website, is the email, I believe. So thanks so much for the call, Harvey. That's a great point. I appreciate it. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, Christopher Hurd will be with us. He is producer of a film called The War You Don't See, and it's all about how the media colludes and has been colluding with power to sell and maintain lies about wars that destroy people's lives and countries. When we come back, we'll be with Christopher Hurd right after this.
These days, we have 24-hour news. The sound bites never stop, and the wars never stop. Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestine. This film is about the war you don't see. Drawing on my own experience as a war correspondent, it will look mainly at television, concentrating on the most popular channels in America and Britain. The film will ask, what is the role of the media in rapacious wars like Iraq and Afghanistan? Why do many journalists beat the drums of war, regardless of the lies of governments? And how are the crimes of war reported and justified when they're our crimes?
Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman while he does good political works throughout the world. You can join us on Facebook at the Norman Goldman Show. You can also send me an email. Adam Klugman is my name. Adam@madashellinamerica.com, or check out my website, madashellinamerica.com, if you want to learn more about me. But the clip that you just heard was from a documentary called The War You Don't See. And our next guest is one of the producers. Christopher Hurd is his name. He's a leading figure in the United Kingdom independent documentary making. He is a former chair of the Sheffield International Documentary Foundation. He was also the founding chair of the Channel 4 BritDoc Foundation. He is producer of many, many extraordinary documentaries, including one called End of the Line. You should check it out at endoftheline.com about the tragic overfishing of our oceans. And he is here with us on the Norman Goldman Show to discuss this latest film with John Pilger called The War You Don't See, all the way from the United Kingdom. Christopher Hurd, welcome to the show.
Hi. Good to talk to you again.
Yes, it's wonderful to talk to you again. I'm glad that we have this chance. So we're
sort of two stand-in guys today, Adam. I'm standing in for John, who's on an aeroplane on the way back from India, and you're standing in for somebody at your end.
It's true, but we are still going to have a meaningful conversation, but I think it's an excellent observation. I have to say that, first of all, if people want to check out the film, they should go to johnpilger.com. Is that the place you'd like to send them, Christopher?
That's great, yeah, and anyone anywhere in the world can watch it there.
I paid $4.99.
I'm going to say it's our stand against the domination of the big media organizations that they may not show the film, but we will.
This was one of those films, and it's called The War You Don't See. You can check it out at johnpilger.com. Christopher Hurd is our guest standing in for John Pilger. First of all, tell us a little. What I want to say is, if this is not about entertainment, you have a social, moral, ethical obligation to go and watch this film, because this is about how wars happen right in front of our faces, like horrible magic tricks that the media pulls off on us. So first of all, before I go off on a rant here, Christopher Hurd, tell me a little bit about the film and who John Pilger is and why it's important.
Well, John's a very well-established journalist over here in the UK and in Australia, where he came from originally. He's made something like 50 documentaries in a career that now spans literally more than 50 years. And indeed, just recently won over here a very, very prestigious award called the Grierson Trustees Award for a lifetime contribution to documentary. So, you know, he's known by some people in America as well. You know, because films have been shown there, and he's talked a lot over in America in universities and colleges and what have you. So, and this is, you know, he's written very, very widely and reported very widely. You know, he's one of the people who, you know, first revealed the terrible excesses of the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. He's one of the people who revealed what was going on in Indonesia with the attacks on the indigenous people there. So, you know, he's a very well-established journalist, and this is his most recent film, at which he turns his eye on the very industry from which he comes.
Right, that's what I found so fascinating about it.
Yeah.
He's a journalist investigating how journalists collude with power to help create wars that destroy
Indeed.
Countries.
Yeah. And that, you know, and that the overarching thesis of this film is that far too often journalists end up serving the interests of the countries from which they come rather than serving the interests of truth, which is, after all, the reason why we as members of the public look to journalists. I think what's at the heart of this is the idea that what journalism should be about is telling to the public the truth about what is being done in our name and holding people in power to account. And that far too often, for a variety of reasons, journalists do not do that. And in the particular area of war, we, as a result of that, do not see the reality of what it is. We see, actually, essentially a sanitized version of what goes on, and it's the version, generally speaking, that governments want us to see.
Well, and the film starts out by examining kind of the history of the public relations industry, started by a gentleman named Edward Bernays and Walter Lippmann, who decided that if they were going to get America into the war, they were going to have to find a way to sell it to them. This is World War I now. They succeed, and then a whole industry kind of cuts its teeth on selling America on the idea of World War I, has been doing it ever since. And I think in the Iraq War, one of the things that was most appalling was that journalists just at about every level, except the most independent journalists, abdicated their responsibility. I want to play a clip. This is John interviewing a journalist who had abdicated his responsibility to try to challenge the official position on the war in Iraq. Let's hear it.
In essence, you were advocating an attack on a defenseless country. That's quite something, isn't it?
What happened was a crime. It was a crime on a very large scale.
Does that make a journalist accomplices?
Yeah, broadly. Mm. Unwitting, perhaps, but yes.
You know, I find that way too little, way, way, way too late. This is someone who had written, I couldn't put it all in there, would have made the clip too long, this kind of glowing imperative for why we needed war and why violence is morally appropriate sometimes. And now here he is after the fact, after 4 million people have been displaced in Iraq, after, you know, millions of people have died, or at least 1 million Iraqis have died, and 5,000 American soldiers. Here he's kind of going, yeah, well, I guess that makes accomplices, and it's appalling in my view, but it does speak to why this is such an important film, because you see so clearly and so comprehensively how the media, both particularly in the UK and in America, abdicated their responsibility to the truth, which might have kept us out of that war. Yes.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. I think this is the key point about this. You know, is that what happens here, and that was the clip you've shown was a very good example of that. That so often, you know, journalists get, you know, caught up in the enthusiasm of politicians for it, and often, by the way, the enthusiasm of the owners of the newspapers or the controllers of the television stations, and when they should be saying, just a minute, let's really stand back dispassionately, let's look at the facts about this, let's look at what's really going to happen here, you know, they don't do that, you know, and that was the clip you gave was a very good example of somebody, you know, who did at the time what he should not have done. And I mean, although it does seem easy to criticize in retrospect, the fact is these people are paid, you know, to do their job properly at the time, you know, so it's not as though it's only in retrospect we can criticize them. You know, we held higher expectations of them at the time.
Yes, we did. And that is precisely the point. And I mean, you even have Dan Rather in the film, you know, kind of saying, not really copping to it. I mean, I felt like he didn't really cop to it. I have this clip I wanted to play. We may run out of time about from this woman from the BBC, who John is really doing a great job of trying to hold to account. And she's trying to make all these excuses for this. Look, Christopher Hurd is our guest, DartmouthFilms.com. Also, you can check out the film at johnpilger.com called The War You Don't See. Can you stay one more segment? It's a long break, but I'd like to get into this a little bit more deeply.
Don't worry. I'll be here.
Great. Christopher Hurd is our guest. Dartmouth Films. Go to johnpilger.com to see The War You Don't See in your home. This is Adam Klugman on the Norman Goldman Show. We'll be right back. No, really. Now we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, filling in for Norman Goldman while he goes around the world doing good political works. We all know that Norman is committed to transforming this country. I've seen it with my own two eyes. I am honored to be here in the place where justice is served, in the chair where fierce independence is the norm. If you want to talk to me, reach me. You can send me an email at adam@madashellinamerica.com. I love hearing from you, but we're going to continue with our guest, who is Christopher Hurd. He is a leading figure in the UK independent documentary field. He is former chair of the Sheffield International Documentary Foundation and was founding chair of Channel 4 Brit Doc Foundation. He is a producer of a new documentary by a gentleman named John Pilger. You can check out the film at johnpilger.com. It's called The War You Don't See. And it is about how for the past 70 or 80 years, the media has been colluding with power to create unnecessary wars that ultimately just lead to devastation for most and profit for a few. And when we last left the conversation, we were talking about how the media had completely abdicated its responsibility during the Iraq War, particularly in the UK and America, and kind of now shrugs its shoulders and says, oh, yeah, we kind of did abdicate our responsibility. Meanwhile, 4 million Iraqis are displaced. 5,000 American soldiers are dead. We've got, what, maybe possibly a million dead Iraqi civilians. This is a horror and, in my mind, a crime against humanity, and yet there is still no accountability. Christopher Heard, welcome back to the show.
Hello. Hi.
So, where we left off, I want to play a clip. We were talking about these kind of two positions that we're hearing from the journalists who abdicated their responsibility. We played one where one guy was like, well, yeah, I guess we did kind of abdicate our responsibility. Yeah, it was a crime, but, you know, what are we going to do about it? This is from someone at the BBC. John Pilger is challenging a woman from the BBC on this. This is the other extreme of someone trying to defend their position. Let's play it.
What the BBC, though, have a duty to do is to report what governments and their representatives are saying, which we, of course, did. We were just reporting, quite legitimately, the claims that people at the time were making.
They weren't legitimate claims, though.
They were in the mouths of legitimate leaders, though, and therefore we had a duty to report that.
But those leaders, both of them you mentioned, Blair and Bush, have long been discredited. I mean, isn't it the BBC's role, as well as reporting what politicians say, to hold power to account?
Of course it is. It's the BBC's duty to scrutinise what it is that people say. We're not there to accuse them of lying, though, because that's a judgment.
No, that's not being suggested, that you make a judgment. The point is that it appears now that those important journalistic challenges were never made.
It's not up to me to make a judgment. We're there to report what their claims are and hold them up to scrutiny and investigate.
The film is The War You Don't See. You can watch it from the comfort of your computer, wherever it happens to be, whether it's in your living room or your office, at johnpilger.com. Again, the film is The War You Don't See, and our guest is Christopher Heard. So, Christopher, go ahead, and what's missing from that conversation?
Well, I must say, you know, just listening back to that, that is the most chilling conversation, isn't it? And the leading broadcaster, in this case in the UK, says our job is to report what men, political leaders say, and refuses to accept that their job is to investigate the truth of it and to hold them to account for what it is that they've said. I mean, if you wanted one piece, you've chosen a brilliant piece there, Adam. If you wanted one piece that encapsulated what this film is about, is it is about the constant failure, and it goes back for many, many years, the constant failure of large sections of the established media to understand that what we as the public expect of them is that they will hold power to account. Not just ask them the difficult question in interview, but devote their energy and their money and their resources to going to find out what really happened, you know?
Yeah, I feel like this clip, the reason I chose this clip is that it really brings up the point. So she's saying, well, we're reporting what's legitimately being said. And then John says, actually, no, you're not. And then she says, well, no, right. Well, no, what we're reporting on is what legitimate leaders are saying. Meanwhile, the whole conversation about the truth is being left out of the conversation.
Absolutely.
And it brings up the role of the media. It's why in America it's called the Fourth Estate. It is the fourth check. It is the fourth unofficial branch of government. And its role, you know, people say, well, they're always reporting the bad news and they're unpatriotic. Its role is to challenge officialdom. That is its primary purpose. And when it abdicates that purpose, it fails. It fails everyone. It fails the system. It fails the victims, certainly. And it even fails the leaders who sometimes need help to be held to account, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I mean, I, you know, I, you know, over here in this country, there was, you know, that during the end of the 19th century, there was during the Crimea War, there was the editor of the Times, yeah, a guy called John Thaddeus Delaney, and they were reporting the reality of what was going on in the war, and he was approached by the Prime Minister at the time, the head of the state here, and said, "This is really, really embarrassing. You're reporting what's going on here, and all these people being killed and terrible conditions." And Delaney said to him, "You know, it is not the job of us to do what statecraft wishes, but to tell the truth as we find it." Mm. And, you know, that basic principle, which sort of is the heart, has been and should be at the heart of journalism ever since Delaney said that, is one that is so frequently now not acknowledged, you know?
Yes.
And that when people, you know, journalists get embedded, you know, with government forces, you know, they become then essentially an extension of them, you know?
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about this concept of embedding. The first time we had ever heard it was during the Iraq War. This whole notion of embedding comes at a great cost to the truth, does it not?
Indeed.
So let's describe it. I mean, we all know kind of what it looks like, which is that reporters are assigned to units, and they're not answerable to their own journalistic ethic, but really become kind of partners in reporting the crime, reporting the war, without the crime that the powers that be want to report on, right?
Because they report it, of course, you know, from the perspective of the troops with whom they are embedded, you know, they're with the troops, and that's the perspective they see. There is an implied contract that they will report it, you know, favorable to those, and there is a practical one, is it's very difficult, you know, if you're with people who are, you know, there was no doubt about it, these guys are in real danger, you know, they run the risk of being killed.
Yes.
You know, whether the war is a just war or not is not the concern of the soldiers. You know, they're risking their lives, and as a result, if you're a journalist embedded with them, you're going to be sympathetic to their predicament. And then that, of course, is the only narrative and the only story that we at home are told. And that's the great danger of it, you know, is that there's one simple perspective, you know, is the only one we see. If you think I often think about this is, imagine if you were fighting a war and all of your journalists were embedded on the other side, and the only thing that you ever saw on your television was the reports from the other side, you would very, very quickly indeed realize that you weren't getting the total picture. And that is exactly the position. But the reason that why often we aren't alert to that is that the embedded journalists are reporting from the perspective of our side. So we think, oh, yeah, that must be okay. That must be the reality of what's going on. But, of course, it isn't. It is one particular perspective.
So my question that keeps coming up is, why did journalists, people like Dan Rather, who had real power, I mean, my goodness, he's the anchor of CBS News.
Yeah.
Why do you think they abdicated that responsibility?
Well, I think that there are lots of reasons, you know, and let's be frank about it. One of them is they're paid a very large amount of money to do what they do, that putting your head above the parapet, you know, when you're in a job like that and saying, just a minute, let's do this differently, let's challenge the authority of the people who run the network, let's take on the government, is not necessarily the way for an easy life, you know, and that's the first thing.
Yeah.
I think secondly, of course, you know, if you're in a country where your citizens are going off and being killed by other people on the other side of the world, it's very, very easy, and Dan Rather says this,
yeah,
I think, in the film, you know, to sort of to drop the independent mind that you really should have, and to sort of feel, oh, yeah, well, I feel that, you know, my people are being killed, I'm going to side with them. You know, and I think the third thing I think that comes into play that explains this is that actually there isn't enough challenge, you know, that these people, particularly people like his position, very, very distinguished, he's seen as a great you know, American figure. He's admired. He's regarded, as somebody sort of above and beyond the terrible everyday struggles of politics. You know, well, then they just get isolated from it. You know,
They
live
right.
in a privileged world.
And then they would have to risk so much to speak truth to power.
To speak out.
It's like you said. Yep. It's you get bought off, you get comfortable, yep. and then you think, well, gosh, yep. that seems like I risk everything. I'm kind of.
I think that's what you know. I think that's what I mean. That's why I think the Dan Rather interview in that film is such an important thing, because I think that's what he essentially owns up to. You know,
he does in his own very indirect way.
In the film.
Hmm? Yeah, in his own very indirect way, he does kind of say that. I would have liked to have seen him come out and say, yeah, I'm really, I'm genuinely regretful and will take this to my grave because the consequences, at one of the consensus, and the film is The War You Don't See. You can check it out at johnpilger.com. You can rent it for $4.99 in the comfort of your own living room or wherever your computer is. It is a must watch. It is not optional for anyone who is liberal, anyone who cares about the devastating impact of wars, particularly this last war, which was a war based on lies, which the media then corroborated by not advocating for the truth, by essentially abdicating its responsibility to the truth. It was a form of collusion. So Christopher Hurd is our guest. I have time for one more clip, and I just think that this brings it home. This is Ethan McCord. This brings up the whole imperative. You interview Julian Assange, and this brings up the whole imperative about why we need organizations like WikiLeaks, because we're not getting truth from power, and we're not getting truth from our journalists. So what we have to do is go outside the system in order to promote the truth. And Julian Assange did that with this kind of the clip that put him on the map, where you watch American soldiers essentially gun down innocent people in the streets of Iraq. This is Ethan McCord. Let's just play this one last clip.
Ethan McCord was one of the first soldiers to reach the scene of the killing. Here he speaks to an audience in the United States.
Myself and the team of soldiers I was with began running in the direction where we heard the Apache fire.
Let's shoot. Thank you.
I was not even close to prepared for the carnage that I was about to walk onto. Myself and another soldier, a 20-year-old private, walked up to the passenger side van and looked inside. The private that I was with reeled back, began to vomit, and quickly ran away. What I saw when I looked in the van was a small girl about 4 years old on the passenger side of the bench seat. She had a severe belly wound and was covered in glass.
We need to evac this child. She's got a wound in the belly.
The glass was in her hair and also in her eyes. The medic radioed in that the little girl needed to be evacuated because there was nothing else he can do here.
Roger, that's a negative on evac and the two civilian kids to Rusty. They're going to have the IVs will take them up to a local hospital. Over.
It was my platoon leader. Need to quit worrying about these kids and pull security, he screamed. At the time, the only thing I can think of was, Roger that, sir.
The film is The War You Don't See. You can check it out at johnpilger.com. Our guest is Christopher Hurd. We only have about a minute left, but the reason I chose that clip is because if we were getting the real stories about the real horror of that war, it would not have gone on as long as it did. And that clip is much longer in the film and much more painful than that. But the reason that wars need to be reported on is because they are devastating and painful, and when we recognize that, we stop them. And when we don't allow the truth to come home, their horror simply perpetuates. So the film is The War You Don't See, johnpilger.com. Christopher Hurd, a parting shot. Thanks so much for coming on. I know it's late there in the UK. You got a parting shot before we go?
Well, very, very good to talk to you, and I just hope, as many people as possible, see this film, because it tells us how important it is we hold those in power to account and don't let them do these things in our name ever again.
Christopher Hurd is our guest. Thank you so much, Christopher. I know we'll be hearing from you again. You're listening to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, in for Norman Goldman. We will be right back with Junkyard Empire.